Thank you, Blessing and Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, December 16, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A Zimbabwean company attempts to block a Zimra tax garnish order in a test case.
It's an interesting case which is testing the constitutionality of the kind of actions that Zimra takes. It will depend on how the court will determine the powers of Zimra.
Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mdenda says the female lawmakers will soon be provided with breastfeeding facilities.
Most of these women that you are beginning to see in this house are childbearing. And there is nothing here in this parliament that allows you to bring a baby.
She said Parliament standing rules and orders.
A pastor who was arrested for allegedly undermining President Robert Mugabe is languishing in remand prison after failing to raise a $500 bail.
There's the stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
In a landmark case before the Constitutional Court with the far-reaching implications for government revenue, the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority's move to garnish companies' bank accounts without a court order is being challenged by Packers International, owners of Chicken Slice and Pizza Slice. Zimra collects government revenue, and because the government is cash-strapped, it has been under pressure to widen the net. Zimra has been missing target revenue collections due to the shrinking formal economy. Constitutional Court law expert Lovemore Maduku tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the case is interesting.
I would just say it's an interesting case which is testing the constitutionality of the kind of actions that Zimra takes. It would depend on how the court will determine the powers of Zimra. But people must always quickly realize that when it comes to revenue collection, the constitution will bend slightly in favor of the tax authorities.
If you were the Zimra lawyer, what would be your advice?
Well, I think that Zimra is a reasonable prospect of success as long as they do not act in a very draconian manner. But the idea that the law must make it fairly reasonable and possible for the tax, because if the law does not do that, it will be very difficult for the fiscal to get revenue.
And if you were advising a company here that is taking Zimra to court, what would be your advice? Do they have any legal leg to stand on?
They would have a legal leg to stand on if they do not go for an absolute taking away of the powers of Zimra. I mean, their only prospect of success will come if they measure their way of approaching the matter. In other words, they must not go for the ultimate killer and say that Zimra must not have any of the powers that it has. They have to strike a balance. They have to put their argument with the realization that Zimra ought to have some powers to be able to collect revenue.
That was constitutional law expert and leader of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly Party, Lovemore Maduku, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Meanwhile, once safe from the taxman's grip, Zimbabwe's churches are now being seen as a source of much-needed revenue in the face of the country's collapsing economy that has seen the closure of hundreds of companies. Studio 7's Ndimiake Makeliele has more.
With the majority of Zimbabweans being people of faith, from Christians to Muslims and traditional believers, prayer is an integral part of their day-to-day lives. At the church, they pour out not only their gratitude or grief, but their wallets as well, boosting church revenues to unprecedented levels. This revenue has now become the target of the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, or ZIMRA, which recently announced its plans to start taxing churches to boost the cash-strapped government's coffers. Spokesperson for the Anglican Church, Precious Shumba, finds Zimra's intended move concerning.
Churches are not businesses. Churches are there to facilitate the worshipping of God. So the taxing that has been shared in the media by Zimra officials, they appear to be trying to raise funds for some other expenditure for the government.
A decade-long economic downturn has left the Zimbabwean government's coffers decidedly lean as it battles to pay civil servants and other expenses. Some, like economist Prosper Chitambara, view the proposed taxes on churches as a desperate government move.
When you look at tax revenues as a proportion of GDP, they've actually gone down quite markedly. I think this reflects the weaknesses in the economy. Even when you look at the prognosis for growth for this year, we are anticipating that probably the economy will grow by no more than 2%. So I think it's a sign of desperation.
The move comes at a time when so-called gospreneurs or gospel entrepreneurs are changing the face of Christianity in Africa. Pentecostal megachurches attract tens of thousands of followers by preaching a gospel of wealth, while their pastors flaunt lavish executive lifestyles. Some Zimbabweans, like PhD candidate Maureen Kademaunga, says gospel entrepreneurs are condemning people to poverty as religion has literally become opium of the masses in Zimbabwe.
These churches are just, you know, an occult economy. And then a lot of them have come up with all these spiritual concepts like miracle money and such other things. And so a lot of people, the desperate ones, the poor ones, like what Karl Marx said, that religion is the opium of the masses. They go there and they take out the last dollar that they have and give to the prophet.
Zimbabwe's Revenue Authority has said the tax authority won't target worshippers' offerings, only churches' income-generating projects. Churches are opposing this move, saying they need the money to run their affairs. Pastor Laban Musasa is with the Apostolic Faith Mission Church.
We collect our own monies, we say fundraising. In that fundraising, when we talk of actually taxing the fundraising, which is meant for building a building which will actually add value to the society, those who will be taxing that, as we have said, the Zimura, to me, is not conducive.
Despite this resistance, Zimra says it plans to start collecting taxes beginning next year. Until then, all the churches can do is pray for a change of heart. For Studio 7 from Washington, this is Ndimyake Mwakalyelye.
We will be posting a video version of this story on our website. You can listen to it or watch it on www.voazimbabwe.com. Don't miss it. Here on Studio 7, your source of balanced news. Kariba pastor Philip Mugadza, who was arrested last Friday for demonstrating at the just-ended ZANU-PF annual conference, is still in remand prison in Victoria Falls after he failed to raise a $500 bail set by magistrate Lindiwe Maposa yesterday. Mugadza, a pastor with the Remnant Church, was charged with contravening Section 46 of the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act for allegedly staging a one-man protest denouncing President Robert Mugabe for presiding over the collapse of the once prosperous Southern African economy. His trial has been set for January 5, 2006. A spokesman, Kumbirai Mafunda of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that Zimbabwe's new constitution grants every citizen the right to say what they want.
Pastor Mugadza is still detained in remand prison in Victoria Falls. This was after he had been admitted to bail in order to pay $500 as bail money, and also order to report once a week to the nearest police station to his residence, that's now the Congo police station in Kariba. But we understand that since the granting of bail yesterday, he is still in prison custody. He has not managed to raise the astronomical figure which was determined by the court. But his lawyer, Mr. Tumani Ngala of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, who is in Victoria Falls and who secured this bail order, has also indicated that he's looking at ways to seek a review from an upper court.
What is he saying with regards to this crime? Is he denying that he committed a crime?
Mr. Mugadza, according to his lawyer, and through his lawyer, Mr. Tulani Kala, indicated in court on Monday, he filed an application for refusal of remand. He was arguing that no, his client has not committed an offense. He doesn't deserve to have been arrested because he was exercising his constitutional rights as enshrined in the Constitution, particularly the rights, freedom to demonstrate and freedom to petition, which is now condemned or is now guaranteed in the new Zimbabwean governance charter. He was arguing that Mr. Mugatha was exercising his constitutional rights and rather than what the state is claiming, that he was a criminal nuisance. He is arguing that his client was exercising his constitutional and fundamental rights, which are guaranteed in the Zimbabwean constitution.
Kumbirai Mafunda is the spokesperson for the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights. He spoke with Jonga Kandemiri from Harare.
Hello, Zimbabwe. How are you? I'm Tatenda Gumbo, and I'm inviting you to send us your audio and voice messages about Christmas and the new year. Our WhatsApp number is 001-202-465-0318. Again, that number is 001-202-465-0318. Tell us how you are doing and what you think about this year's Christmas. Remember to tell us who you are and where you are from.
National Assembly Speaker Jacob Mudenda says Parliament will provide facilities for breastfeeding lawmakers to care for their babies during parliamentary sessions. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Mudenda made the remarks after lawmaker Priscilla Misairambwe Mushonga of the Movement for Democratic Change Formation led by Professor Walsh Mengube brought a baby in the chamber to complain that Parliament is not women-friendly.
Most of these women that you are beginning to see in this house are childbearing. And there is nothing here in this parliament that allows you to bring a baby.
She said Parliament standing rules and orders have no provision allowing lawmakers time out to breastfeed. Ms. Aira Mumushonga said even the constitution accords equal opportunities to men and women to participate in political activities, yet parliamentary rules did not provide the same opportunities.
As long as we are hamstrung by inability to be able to do so, because we have to look after them. As it is today, it is an important debate. I don't have any question about the debate. So I have to come here and debate. But I understand, Speaker, because I looked at the standing rules and orders, and there is no provision that allows somebody to bring in a baby.
Mudenda said lawmaker Priscilla Misairambwe Mushonga's observation was correct and Parliament would provide facilities for nursing legislators to bring babies so that they can participate in debates and go back to breastfeed on Parliament premises. Misairambwe left the house with a baby after the Speaker's ruling as babies are not allowed in the house. Harare worker Lois Mukombe applauded the decision taken by Parliament.
I think it's very important because, you know, you see there are some women who are professionals who spend most of their times at work, and sometimes they would want to be with their children. Yeah, sometimes they cannot leave them with their maids. And there's a time in which a child has to be with a mother.
Zimbabwe's labor laws grant workers 3 months maternity leave and 1 hour for nursing during working hours after the 3 months, but some friendly companies and organizations provide extra hours for breastfeeding mothers. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
A baseline survey conducted by the Disability HIV AIDS Trust shows that Zimbabweans living with visual impairments are having difficulties in accessing HIV AIDS information. Correspondent Patricia Mudadigwa has more.
Speaking to Studio 7, Hamida Ismail Mauto, DART Head of Operations, said the failure by the visually impaired in Zimbabwe to access information in appropriate formats had left them exposed to HIV and AIDS.
Okay, maybe when they experience have issues related to HIV/AIDS, they quickly understand them. And they will know to say, for example, if I have a lymph node under my arm, what does this really mean? So that kind of information is not there. So what they are just saying is that things that are pictorial, we need to just translate the picture into Braille.
Mauto said DART is partnered with Progressio to translate available information on HIV and AIDS into appropriate formats for the visually impaired that include Braille and audio.
Information is there, and the unfortunate thing is that the information gets to them late. It's outdated. by the time it gets to women and girls with disabilities, the information is already outdated. So as DART, we need to be able to keep abreast with the information and adapt new information as it comes and try and distribute it in a format that persons with visually impairment will understand.
Tsitsidzashe Mashingaidze, a visually impaired second-year student at the University of Zimbabwe's Social Work Department, confirmed to Studio 7 that it has been difficult to access information on HIV and AIDS. She's happy that DART will now be helping them in accessing current information on HIV and AIDS.
But it was not that perfect, that we can understand well. But we are suggesting and we are given the opportunity to say what we want to be done for us to understand well, to understand much on HIV.
Sylvester Shaw, who is also visually impaired, said the provision of HIV and AIDS information to the visually impaired will help them to be safe and also enable them to know how to live positively for those who get infected.
This program will help so much in trying to widen the scope to which we, people with visual impairment, to try and have more access to the information, since the information has been coming, but sometimes it happened that the information would come to us at the time that maybe it would be outdated.
In Zimbabwe, usually disability and poverty are inseparable. Zimbabwe ratified the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, where it committed itself to align its policies and laws to the dictates of the international instrument, but not much is visible on the ground to show the commitment. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Coming up, Zimbabweans in the diaspora are concerned by the lack of leadership renewal in the country. But first, a look at regional and international news. Opposition leaders in central Ethiopia say security forces have killed more than 40 people in recent weeks amid protests against a government development plan.
The United States has called on Nigerian officials to investigate clashes between army troops and Shiite Muslim sect that reportedly left hundreds of people dead.
And police in Iraq say gunmen have kidnapped at least 26 people of a Qatari hunting party in the southern part of the country near the Saudi border.
The ouster of war veterans Minister Christopher Muchangwa by his ZANU-PF Mashonaland West Province has left many wondering if this marks the beginning of a campaign against presidential aspirant Emmerson Mnangagwa. Some say given the power struggles, Mr. Mnangagwa could ultimately find himself being kicked out of ZANU-PF the way former Vice President Joyce Mujuri was ousted. But one analyst, Gondovanzi Magonya, says not so fast.
I do not think that this could spell the end of Mnangagwa, considering that the trio that masterminded and orchestrated the genocide of the Ndebele people is still intact. I think what might happen is that the very same thing that happened to Mnangagwa when he lost constituents in 2000, remember, he was actually made the Speaker of Parliament. The very same thing might happen again this time around. But we replaced him with a female vice president, and he is reassigned to go and become the national chairperson of ZANU-PF, as they currently have no chairperson. I do not think this could be the end of him.
But why would it be difficult for them to push him out? We saw them doing it so easily to Mrs. Mjuru.
You must remember that the executors of Kukurahundi and other genocidal practices and other heinous crimes against mankind that were committed by the ZANU regime, Mjuru may not have been pivotal. But where Mugabe is guilty, Mnangagwa is equally guilty.
That was political analyst Nkondo Mvanzi Magonya speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo from the United Kingdom. Zimbabweans in the diaspora are concerned by the lack of leadership renewal in the country, not only in ZANU-PF, but all political parties in general. For a view of what Zimbabweans living outside the country are thinking of events that shaped 2015 in their country and related issues like international terrorism, in their new chosen havens, we turned to political analyst Julius Muchkambizi in the United Kingdom. Muchkambizi says, despite all the negatives that have characterized 2015, he's not giving up hope about his country that one day it will come out of the abyss.
Well, I haven't given up hope in terms of the potential that our country has. It still has potential in terms of succeeding. But the problem in Zimbabwe is a problem of governance. It's a problem of a failure to change leadership within political organizations. And that on its own is frustrating because at the end of the day, we don't have new thinking in all these political parties. That then leads to a failure of new thinking and new governance or a new framework of governance, so to speak, at a national level.
You have been in the United Kingdom for more than 10 years now, and there is a big Zimbabwean community that is there. What is the thinking of the Zimbabwean diaspora when it comes to all these issues that you are raising? Is there anything that can be done by you and your colleagues who have been out there and gaining new knowledge and new information that could help your country, Zimbabwe?
Zimbabweans here are still engaged in the affairs of Zimbabwe. They want to contribute. I think they have a whole lot of things that they can contribute in. They can help and contribute in changing the Zimbabwean fortunes because they have acquired knowledge here. They have acquired a lot of skills that they can input in our country for the collective development of our country. The unfortunate thing is they are not being given the chance to do so. I'm not saying people who are in Zimbabwe are backward or they are secondary to us. No. But, you know, it's about complementing each other. You know, there is that element that's in the diaspora that's not there in Zimbabwe. If it's added to what's there in Zimbabwe, it can be a fuel that can lead to the development of our country.
We know that people in the diaspora are confused, or there is confusion back home in terms of what the Zimbabwean diaspora stands for. We recently saw that there is a policy that the government was coming up, but the confusion still remains. What would you say to the government in terms of the Zimbabwean diaspora community and what it can do to help move the country forward?
The government of Zimbabwe should remember that we are all nationals of Zimbabwe, one way or the other, and they shouldn't view nationals of their country with suspicion. You know, there is this brush that says, well, people who are in the diaspora are inclined to support opposition political parties. People in the diaspora will be inclined to support opposition political parties if the government of the day is failing. If the government of the day is not failing, then people in the diaspora will support the government of the day. It's just as simple as that. So, you know, it's myopic, it's short-sightedness in terms of view. And I think the government should have vision, should look beyond politics and partisanship, to start thinking for the country, to start engaging people so that they can contribute for the better, for the collective betterment of our lives. It's Zimbabwe.
Looking at Zimbabweans wherever they are, whether they are in the USA, whether they are in England, whether they are in Paris, there's a new dimension that is coming up. It is not completely new, but it has happened before. But this time around, the threat is serious. How are you surviving and living in a country where, you know, the security levels are being heightened all the time because of the new ISIS threat?
It's difficult. People get worried. You get scared for your own life. But at the same time, I'm a person of faith. You just say, well, God is, you know, is more powerful than all this kind of thing. But at the same time, you don't want to give the feeling to would-be terrorists to say, you know, we are winning. Because if you start drawing your feet back, you know, if you start not engaging in your own life, then it means that you would have given them victory. So you continue doing the things that you would be doing, and then maybe whatever happens.
Lastly, do you have a message for Zimbabwe this festive season?
I wish them a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and also say, well, I know it's time, it's a festival time, but don't drink and drive, don't do things that endanger your own lives and other people's lives. Just, you know, be normal, celebrate, but at the same time, you know, think about the future. You can't over-celebrate, if I were to put that way.
Political analyst Julius Sesayi Muchkambizi speaking with us earlier on from the United Kingdom.
Zimbabwe. How are you? I'm Tatenda Gumbo, and I'm inviting you to send us your audio and voice messages about Christmas and the new year. Our WhatsApp number is 001-202-465-0318. Again, that number is 001-202-465-0318. Tell us how you are doing and what you think about this year's Christmas. Remember to tell us who you are and where you are from.
The Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe, in conjunction with the Women in Politics Support Unit and other women's rights groups, will meet in Bulawayo tomorrow for a two-day conference to discuss the status of women, money and politics during this year. Sakile Ngoma of the Women in Politics Support Unit tells us that the conference will be an ideal platform to analyze the gains and challenges faced this year by the women's movement.
For the next 2 days, under the support and collaboration with the Zimbabwe Institute, Women in Politics Support Unit, WIPSU, the Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe, Women in Leadership Development Trust, and the Southwestern Region Gender Network, SIGIN, will be meeting, convening to deliberate on women, money, and politics. Essentially, what the conversation is going to be about is, what is the politics about women's money? Why is it that women seem to perpetually be in a state of poverty or of marginalization? And what we want to interrogate is to interrogate the economic empowerment models that are there. Are these economic empowerment models that are present, are they taking women out of their poverty? Are they taking them out of marginalization? We know that over the years, yes, there are stories of success where women have triumphed and have been able to succeed against all odds. But the question is, the generality of Zimbabwean women are not yet in that special category. The question is, what's happening to women? But most essentially, where is the money? Is the money in the bank? Is the money in the government? Is money in private sector? Where is the money that can assist women to move themselves and to be agents of their own economic empowerment? And we're going to be having this conversation with women who are engaged in all sorts of walks of life across Zimbabwe, cutting across the entire 10 provinces of the country, speaking with women who are in the political arena, speaking with women who are in the private sector, speaking with women who are in community-based organizations, and just speaking to women in the neighborhood.
That was Sakile Ngoma of the Women in Politics Support Unit speaking to us from Bulawayo. As a reminder to you, our listeners, please stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Gibbs and Blessing will be leading discussions about the issue of the visually impaired Zimbabweans who are complaining that they are being left out of HIV/AIDS programs. To join the discussion, text us on 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios. Unfortunately, time is not on our side. Now we try to give Zimbabweans a recap of our top stories.
A Zimbabwean company attempts to block a Zimratex garnish order in a test case.
Zimbabwe Speaker of Parliament says female lawmakers will soon be provided with breastfeeding facilities.
And a pastor who was arrested for allegedly undermining President Robert Mugabe is languishing in Rimbant prison after failing to raise a $500 bail.
That's our broadcast this evening. Join us at 7 every evening for news in 3 languages. And visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Milinkomo. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.